So here comes the first PowerPoint presentation of the workshop. Yes, ladies, gentlemen, and others, good afternoon. I'm very happy to be here. To build a bit on what Mr. Franier was saying, yes, I am Belgian, my mother is German, I live in Spain and I work in Strasbourg. So when we talk about mobility and identity, well, right now I could eventually be a bit confused, but I'm not, so. So yeah, I do work for the partnership between the European Commission and the Council of Europe in the youth field. It's a long name, but the partnership is basically a structure, a secretariat, which aim at working on issues, youth issues, which are of interest of both institutions. So to try to create synergies between the activities, the projects, and the policies of those two institutions. So I'm going to use the 20 minutes now to briefly present what we are doing when it comes to human rights education and intercultural dialogue, and then to try to go a bit more into our approach to intercultural dialogue and intercultural learning. I won't need to define it anymore. I think it was we are very much in line with what was said before, and then to try to highlight a bit of the challenges we face in our work today when it comes to intercultural dialogue, for instance. So our objectives when it comes to the partnership is to work on European active citizenship. I've put it into parentheses because active, I mean, citizenship as such is understood by us as an active, an action in itself. Participation, human rights education and intercultural dialogue, so this is what I'm going to focus on now. Social cohesion, inclusion and equal opportunities, recognition, quality, visibility of youth work and training, and a better knowledge of youth and youth policy development in general. So this is what the partnership is working on with the support of the two institutions and the stakeholders involved in youth work at the European level. So our priorities, we work on a three-year program system. Our priorities until 2013 are to promote knowledge-based youth policy by developing and providing efficient tools. So this is really a knowledge or evidence-based policy work that we are doing and research. We try to support youth work and building capacity of youth workers, youth trainers, youth leaders at European level. So this is basically the field of training we are talking about in this case. We work on very specific regional and geographical scopes, Southeast Europe, Eastern Europe, Caucasus, Euromed and Euro-Africa. And we also have a set of publications, magazine and knowledge book that we work on, develop and publish on a regular basis. So this is our priorities, and actually they don't change much, they are just adjusted to the needs of the young people we work with and to the policies. When we talk about human rights education and intercultural dialogue, we mainly, or at least in our program, it mainly fits into the Euromed and Euro-Africa work. However, that doesn't mean that human rights education and intercultural dialogue can only happen in this regional scope, obviously. But this is where it's mainly placed in our work. In this work, we do work obviously with the European Commission and the Directorate of Youth and Sport of the Council of Europe, since this is what the partnership is about. But we also work with the NOSU Center of the Council of Europe. Miguel Silva will talk about one of the projects they have developed tomorrow. And we work with a number of other structures like the Annalyn Foundation or other stakeholders like the European Youth Forum and so on. It's important probably to mention for those who don't know it, that the Council of Europe in the youth field is the unique institution in Europe, and as far as I know, in the world, that has a co-management procedure or system, meaning that anything that is decided about young people, whatever we talk about policies or programs, is decided together with the governmental bodies and the civil society organization. So there is a real co-management system in the Council of Europe, which is quite important to highlight, I think, in this case. So, example of projects and activities briefly. We do a lot of research work. So we, for example, will have soon a conference, or soon in October normally, a conference on indicators for intercultural dialogue. So we are actually trying to develop a set of indicators for intercultural dialogue activities within the youth field. When it comes to youth policy, participation, intercultural dialogue, we have a series of training courses and training focusing either on youth workers, youth leaders, or training for trainers, which are developed, as I said, with different institutional partners. The NOSO Center is quite involved in developing every year a university on youth and development, which takes place in Spain, but they also have similar processes with Latin America and Africa now, so this is also an important project or activity that is taking place in the frame of diversity, human rights and participation. Global education, so Mr. Silva will talk about that tomorrow. Competence development, it was mentioned several times before that competencies are key, and this is something we are focusing on a lot at the moment, not only in intercultural dialogue, but in general, in non-formal education. I will come to that in a minute. We have developed also a series of campaigns and, as I said, a number of publications. This is roughly the type of activities that we do, but of course, well, we do much more than that. This was said already twice today, so I won't elaborate much on that, but I would say it's not our motto or the only motto, but we believe that, education has to serve really the development of human personality and strengthening the respect for human rights and fundamental freedoms, but it's also education in the sense of it's a must to support people's competence development, and this is really what we try to do through our work. We work within certain frameworks and along a number of principles. Our frameworks are the White Book on Intercultural Dialogue, which was published by the Council of Europe in 2008, and the European Year of Intercultural Dialogue of the European Union, which was also in 2008. And within this framework, framework, I think it's the adequate word, we have a number of principles that we try to follow, which are human rights, democracy, and the rule of law, which are principles of the Council of Europe, equal dignity and mutual respect. Gender equality is extremely important in our work, and by gender we don't mean biological gender or sex, but we also mean gender in terms of gender identity. So taking into account gay, lesbian, trans, intersex, and so on and so forth. So this is also something we focus on a lot. And of course combating the barriers that prevent intercultural dialogue and everything it means, and I will come to that in a minute. Human rights are our basis for intercultural dialogue. I think it was mentioned this morning, I don't remember who said that, but that they are interlinked, and obviously you can have intercultural dialogue if you don't take human rights into account. I will also say a bit later how the role of intercultural learning is equally important in our work at least. So human rights for us is the framework for intercultural dialogue to happen. It's the framework of the institutions to fight against terrorism and extremism. We, in our work, and mainly in the training fields, because now I'm really talking about education or training in non-formal education settings and along non-formal education approaches, educational approach, so outside the formal education sector, which doesn't mean that synergies are not possible, on the opposite. We have the approach that human rights can be discussed, however, they are not negotiable, so it's one thing is not equal to the other, but yeah, they can be discussed. They are not relative, they belong to everyone, and they are human. They are human in the sense that in our activities, many times people are a bit puzzled, especially when we talk about newcomers, saying, yeah, well, if human rights are so wonderful and if we all subscribe to that, why isn't the world perfect, basically? And we always try to highlight that human rights are human in the sense that they've been written by human people, adopted by human people, they are violated by human people, and they are judged by human people as well, by human beings. And this is something that we always try to keep in mind, which doesn't diminish the value of human rights, but which is also important to keep in mind. Our understanding of intercultural dialogue is an open and respectful exchange of views between individuals and groups with different ethnic, cultural, religious, and linguistic backgrounds and heritage on the basis of mutual understanding and respect. This is our approach to intercultural dialogue, or our understanding of what it is, but it's also very much linked to our view of what culture could be, because culture is diverse, is dynamic, and includes some of the elements you have in that definition, if I can call it a definition or an understanding. It's not the only one, obviously. We many times also highlight the fact that sometimes there are contradictions, but at the same time there are more complementarities eventually, like, yeah, we ought to claim the right to be different when equality is oppressing, when you have to behave and follow and think in a certain way, you have to claim the right to be different. But when there is a risk of discrimination because of that difference, then you also have the right to claim for equality. Or more than a right, it's even a duty. Human rights education, or our approach, or what we consider also important in human rights education is, and that has something that is linked to what I was saying before, that human rights are human, is about reducing the accepted levels of humiliation. So we may not yet be in a situation where human rights education and intercultural dialogue can be the solution to anything, but at least we can reduce the level of humiliation. The conditions for dialogue for us in youth work, or in European youth work, I should say, is that there is equal dignity of all the participants. There is no hierarchy in the people we work with, at no moment, no point, in no circumstances. So there's really equal dignity. There's a voluntary engagement in dialogue, and this is also a principle actually of non-formal education. There has to be a voluntary step to be done by the person or by the group of participants to engage in dialogue. If not, it's just not possible, it's not a dialogue. We need openness, curiosity, and commitment. There's no winning desire, and this is also very important when we talk about prejudices and stereotypes, how far, even in a dialogue situation, we sometimes use them to win an argumentation, and this is not the point here. Of course, a readiness to look at both cultural similarities and differences, and I will also come back to that, I don't know if I still have time, yes, a bit later to explain also the, let's say, the other side of the medal of such a statement. We need a minimum degree of knowledge about the different feature of our culture and the other culture. So you were saying before, I think, like, how can I define, how can I explain my culture? Well, this is the point. If you really want to talk about cultures, you have to have a certain knowledge of yours and the one of the others. And of course, the ability to find a common language for understanding and respecting cultural differences. I am not here entering into what culture is. It's a debate we are having for a long time and which will continue, and it's normal as culture evolves. So culture here is a very, very general term, or even generic, but we don't have time to really go into detail about that, and I'm sorry. This is where, for us, intercultural dialogue, intercultural learning, and human rights education do meet and do generate this potential for social transformation. They are different, but they are interlinked, and you can't have intercultural dialogue without an intercultural learning process. You can't have intercultural dialogue if there is no behind a certain consideration, at least, for human rights education. But when the three meet and are taken into consideration in our activities, and especially training activities, this is where you reach a certain space for a potential for transformation, personal transformation, social transformation. So this is really where we place in this little center our activities, and our aim is also basically to reach this social transformation. I will go through that briefly because I already mentioned the conditions. So all cultures are equally worth. Yeah, there's no hierarchy. We all carry prejudices and biases. And this is not to take the paternalistic approach to say, ooh, don't say that you don't have prejudices. We all have prejudices. We all know that. But it's also to really be able to acknowledge the fact that our value judgment play a role in any kind of dialogue process, and we have to be aware of the positive role they may play, because in some cases they do, and the negative role they play, and that we never know anything about what other people think. We will never know that totally when we enter in a certain dialogue process, so we have to be aware of that. We clearly wish to avoid confusing culture and religion. It's not the same thing, so however religion can be seen as an element that can be part of a social or common element that can be part of a cultural group, it is not the same thing. It was said already before as well, and I said it too, cultures are permanently evolving, they can never be defined. We insist more and more in our activities that culture is dynamic. It's dynamic, it's personal, it's social, and we have to take that into account. We just can't define culture as such in one way. So therefore, yeah, we share multiple cultural and identity affiliation. Empathy, tolerance of ambiguity and role distance are key attitudes, and I will have a slide specifically on that because this is getting more and more important in our work to focus on especially tolerance of ambiguity. I was saying before that we need knowledge, but here knowledge is also not enough. You need to really have a certain number of experiences to be able to share, to be able to build basically on experience you go through, but other people go through as well, or you go through all together. And therefore, yeah, we are all different and we are all equal, which was also the name of two campaigns of the Council of Europe. We work a lot on competences. When we develop our training activities, competences of young people for intercultural dialogue, intercultural learning, cultural competences, as it was said before, are extremely important to focus on, especially in non-formal learning approaches or educational approaches. So, quickly, what we try to focus on in terms of competences when it comes to competences for dialogue are tolerance, and I will also come back on that term, openness, the ability to self-criticism, the awareness of our own prejudices, our own moral values, again, the recognition of the different dimension of identity, the personal one, the social one, plural identities, empathy, again, tolerance of ambiguity and role distance. So those are not the unique or the only competences we focus on when we work on intercultural dialogue or dialogue in general, but they are some of the most important. Tolerance of ambiguity is something we focus a lot on because we really understand it as the degree to which a person can endure not being able to implement his, her, her own expectations. So intercultural learning and intercultural dialogue for us can help avoiding using competing stereotypes. We have to be able to accept our limitation in terms of knowledge, in terms of understanding. We have to aim at developing it, but we just can't know everything all the time. It's impossible. So to be able to deal with this tolerance of ambiguity allows us, as people, to develop a different understanding of the other person or the groups we're talking with or talking to, and to also develop a bigger empathy. And this is something that is increasing in terms of importance in our work. It's just about dealing with contradictions, because those will remain as culture evolves and as we all change, this will remain. I see some puzzling faces. Do you follow me? Yeah? Yeah? Okay. The limits of our discourse and the side effects, this is something I wanted to mention, and I will end with that, is we work with group of young people understanding like from 18 to 30 years old, some of them very experienced already in international youth work or European youth work, in Euromed cooperation projects, and so on and so forth. Some are rather newcomers. And when we talk about culture, it's often or more and more becoming something obscure and not really a clear element of our work, I would say. And why? Because as I was saying, like, we tend to see culture as something that can be defined, as something homogeneous, which is not the case. But unfortunately, because of a lack of time, because of a lack of resources sometimes, because of a lack of knowledge in some cases, we remain on a very superficial level where you take a person from whatever culture, another person from another culture, you put them together, they exchange their differences, similarities, and here we are all happy and we understand each other, which is not obviously so simple. But it's true that there is sometimes in our work the impossibility to go much beyond that level, and we can see that sometimes young people reproduce that simplification, I would say, which is important, obviously, but which is not enough. Intercultural learning has become somehow a self-fulfilling prophecy in our work. And again, when I say our work, I talk about the European youth field. It became very famous, or even a fashionable term, 10, 15 years ago, and generated a number of methods, a number of models that we haven't, or that today we don't challenge enough. So we have to go beyond our approach to intercultural learning. I think we have to rethink intercultural learning and intercultural dialogue, or intercultural learning in relation to intercultural dialogue, because it's not the solution as such. So stereotypes may end up being reinforced, a bit as I was saying with the example of these new groups or newcomers, let's say, working on intercultural learning, sometimes by trying to highlight the richness of diversity, you tend to reproduce a number of stereotypes without even being aware of that. And this is a challenge we are facing also in our work. We are conscious, but we have to try to find probably a different approach, a different training approach, especially to avoid that with the young group we work with. We have to rethink education, we have to rethink some approaches we have because they are no longer adequate to young people's realities. Things move and change and fast. And our approach sometimes a bit more rigid, although I think we are really trying to adjust, but we don't manage to always do it quick enough. And then there is also something which we notice more and more, which is the shift of our understanding of tolerance, which at the very beginning of international youth work or European youth work, and especially in the field of training, was a very proactive word, or a word that was generating a lot of proactive attitude. It was the obligation to be intolerant whenever human rights were violated, wherever in the discourse or in reality, or whenever there was a situation of discrimination. The tolerance was really ending at the moment where there was any kind of discrimination or human rights violation, so where we were promoting tolerance, empathy, dialogue, understanding, we were emphasizing a lot that tolerance has a limit. And nowadays we have the feeling that the word is used more and more in a more passive way. It doesn't have so much strength as before, and this is also a challenge we have to address in our work, especially in intercultural learning and intercultural dialogue. However, we also have to deal with other discourse which says that when you talk about tolerance, it means that someone is in a situation where he, she, or the group has to tolerate someone else, and there is a relation of eventually inequality there. So how adequate is the use of this word nowadays, for instance? So these are just thoughts that I wanted to share with you, but there are some elements that we are very much aware of in our work, and that we have to tackle and discuss, because this is the heart of our work on intercultural dialogue and intercultural learning. I will stop here. I would love to say more, and I would have loved even to concretely, practically work with you on an example of activity we could do, but there's no time for that. I would like to thank you very much. I will not be able to stay with you much longer. I don't know what time is it, because I have to leave. But thank you very much for having me here.